Hi there, Radio West podcast listeners. It's Doug here. So this week on the show, we've been exploring the value of local news. And I mean, for obvious reasons. There's a pandemic and all of us are paying way more attention to local stories and local updates and briefings than we normally do. Because really, it's at times like this when the news that's close to us really matters. And one of the concepts we talked about on the show with Professor Penny Abernathy is news deserts. These are places, regions, or counties all around the country that effectively have no newspaper. And the reporter Charles Bethay of The New Yorker magazine, he was also interested in these news deserts, and he wanted to find one. He wanted to go there and see what it was like. He joined us recently to talk about the story that he wrote about Jones County, North Carolina, and a small town there, very small, called Pollocksville.
Pollocksville is, you know, it's got one street through town, Main Street. It's got two stoplights. It's got no grocery store. It's got no movie theater. And it has no newspaper. And it used to, decades ago, there was a paper that served the whole county or a few different papers that evolved over time. But by the time I got there, they were gone. So, you know, it's a county and a town within the county that's bereft of a lot of the things that people need and want. And, you know, the Dollar General store is the place where people go to buy sundry items. And the auto shop, run by a pretty amazing character, is where people would go to, certain people would go to spread and share news and gossip. And there are a few little hubs of information like that. It's very kind of small town, old school America in that way.
One of the questions that you were asking people in the town was, I guess it was, you're sort of getting at, do you miss the fact that there's not a newspaper, or if a newspaper would make a difference? What did they tell you?
Well, I mean, I assumed the answer was going to be yes, it would make a difference, and, you know, a very clear answer along those lines. But interestingly, with a lot of them, there hadn't been a paper there in such a long time, or at least a real viable paper that sort of, you know, did more than just print the jury duty list, and that held authorities, you know, the local officials to account for their decisions and such. It had been so long since there was such a paper there that they had sort of forgotten perhaps what a paper really could do. And so they weren't actually as enthusiastic about the idea as I thought they'd be until we started talking about it more. And some of them sort of started remembering or realizing, actually, you know, a paper might be useful around here.
Let's talk about the mayor, Mayor Bender. Mm-hmm. He's an interesting character. I mean, it sounds like a town that was probably like a lot of small towns in the Southeast, Trump country, probably fair to say. This guy's a Democrat, not a terribly liberal Democrat, though, it sounds like. Interesting fellow. Tell us about the mayor.
Yeah. I mean, I think he's effectively a Republican, but he's a Democrat because, when, you know, 40 or 50 years ago, when he first registered to vote, it behooved him as an ambitious, you know, future politician to call himself a Democrat, because that's who ran things in the state at that time.
Yeah.
So he joined the majority party at the time, and just didn't really matter to change his party affiliation over time. But he's one of, you know, a few established families in the county who've been there since, gosh, I think, you know, the early 18th century, for a few hundred years. And, you know, they're plantation people. His family ran for a while, it was a shop that supplied, like, or a factory that supplied convenience stores, something like that. What they did, though, it became unprofitable in the county. Like a lot of businesses, it had to leave. So his actual family business is now in an adjoining county, because, like so much else, it just couldn't survive in Jones County. But he was educated. He went to college, and I found him to be a sharp guy. You know, he was understandably concerned and a little skeptical when this New Yorker writer dropped into his front door and started asking questions. And I still do feel a certain amount of pity in that regard, because it'd been a long time, as he acknowledged to me, that anyone had asked him hard questions who wore the title of journalist. even in the town halls that they have there, you know, there just weren't many people who would show up and ask questions about why decisions were made, things of that nature. So he had sort of consolidated a good amount of power by the time I showed up.
I have to say, reading the piece, you kind of feel sorry for him a little bit when, as we'll get to, you kind of uncover this sort of malfeasance scandal. It's not huge, but the mayor does not know quite what to do with the fact that you've got this, you know, big city newspaper, new magazine reporter who's come and asked all of these difficult questions.
Yeah. So the big story that's emerged there over the last few years, as it has in other parts of coastal North Carolina, is Hurricane Florence, which hit the area in 2018 and destroyed, I mean, massive amounts of destruction across that part of the coast. And Jones County was hit hard, and Pollocksville, where this mayor operates, was hit one of the hardest. There was 20-foot floods through the town, and the town hall was destroyed, this beautiful old town hall by the river that Bender, the mayor, was particularly affectionate about. And it's where he had his office. And so, as far as the quote-unquote scandal that I uncovered went, you know, basically there's a procedure, there's a process by which decisions about how to use money should be conducted. And it appeared that, and according to others who work closely with the mayor, that he had basically prioritized this town hall rebuilding project that he was favorable towards because it's where he had his office. And he allocated close to $70,000, which, yes, not huge in the grand scheme, but pretty large amount of money for a small town, to renovating and rebuilding the town hall without going through the proper channels and getting the proper okays from others. And certainly the citizens in the town were not aware of it. And the reason that, you know, I mentioned that is because that's where a newspaper would have been useful.
Right.
When people vote for politicians, it's useful to know where the politicians are putting the money, the public dollars. You know, a lot of the townspeople probably would have been okay with what he did. Some maybe not. But the whole point was that he was doing it somewhat secretly because there was no newspaper there to help tell that story. And he was quite he got pretty riled up when I started asking questions, which, you know, and I acknowledged in the article, I took ownership of the fact that, you know, it's unusual for a national magazine writer to drop into a town of 300 and start asking questions about how public money is used. But that's sort of where the story took me. And I think, you know, somebody should have been asking those questions other than me, frankly.
Yeah. There's this scene that you set at a commissioners meeting, which are being held in this former pharmacy across the street, as you put it, from the Dollar General store. It's Tuesday night, sometime in November, and one of the residents of town, Alice Strayhorn is her name, she speaks up, and because this idea of this flood damage ordinance comes up, and she says, "I didn't know anything about this. What are you talking about?" Would you just talk about this scene, if you would, because the mayor says, "Well, you should know about this. It was in the paper, but the problem is there's not really a paper."
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of incredible from a reporting behind the scenes point of view. I mean, that was the first probably 2 hours I spent in the county. I sat down in that meeting and heard that exchange and was like, this is the thing that I'm trying to capture, is, you know, what happens when there's no paper and a citizen asks a question and a public official points to a paper that is in an adjoining county that this citizen doesn't get. And I was like, this is it. You know, it just emerged right in front of me as soon as I sat down in this room. And so it was a very useful and illuminating scene in the story, but a sad one, you know, for the life of the townspeople, because the mayor is deflecting a good question from this woman, Alice Strayhorn, whose property was, you know, continually getting flooded by these heavy rains and storms, not even just Florence, but other storms just continually were flooding her property. And she had legitimate questions about, you know, ways to remedy that situation that the town could have helped facilitate. And the mayor just kept saying, no, it's, you know, the discussion we had about this already took place. We talked about it. It was in the paper. And she said, what paper? And again, he was talking about a paper that is in an adjoining county. So, that was just sort of a startling thing to hear him say to someone who was just desperate to understand what was going on.
There's another part of this issue of news deserts that comes up, and that is papers that are still around, but just barely. Like, they don't really have the staff they used to have. They don't have the journalists that they used to have. And there's one of these that you tell about in Jones County. It's the Jones Post. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so that's kind of the skeleton of a newspaper that is there largely just in name only at this point. But it's the latest, skinniest iteration of a history of papers that have been more substantial there. And this current iteration, it has no actual staff in the county, which is a red flag. It only has a few staffers in adjoining counties, and they really don't have – they're responsible for reporting in those other counties. And so Jones County is sort of their last – it's sort of the thing that they do with whatever little time, extra time they may have. The editor of the paper in name only, he occasionally would drive through Jones County. But he told me he would call the police chief in the county, once a month, and sometimes the guy got back to him, sometimes he didn't. He didn't have time to send anybody to these meetings that I was sitting in on. It was the appearance of a paper in name only. Yeah. And everyone I talked to said, no, there's no paper here. It's something that only a few people were even vaguely aware of.
You asked if that paper would ever again serve as a civic watchdog covering crime, covering corruption, because, I mean, you do tell a bit of the history of that paper, and it seemed kind of great. I mean, it uncovered this big story from the late 1980s about this, New York trying to dump trash in that region on this barge that was making news in the time. I mean, it sounded like they did good work in those days.
Yeah, they did. I think there was a period there of 10 or 20 years when, the garbage barge story, that was a huge national story. And they weren't the only ones to report on it, but they were out early on that story and helped divert all these tons of waste from New York on a barge from being dumped in the county. I mean, it's a great example of civic journalism. And some of the reporters who were there at that time were still alive. They were really colorful, feisty older ladies that I met with and just had some incredible turns of phrase to describe, the good work they used to do. They called it tail burning.
Yeah.
Yeah. They wished there was somebody still around to do some of that tail burning and to hold these public officials to account. But they were themselves, they were too old to do that kind of work. And there was just nobody there to step in at this point. And there was also just no infrastructure. I mean, that's the key, right? You can have people who want to help tell the stories, but it costs money. I asked a guy who worked at an adjoining county's paper, what would it cost to do a very basic newspaper, to start one in Jones County again? And the figure was like $300,000 that he came up with. And that was like a bare bones figure. And, you're going to talk to other experts, Penny and other folks, I think, about models for sustainable journalism. That's more their expertise than mine. But, where's that money going to come from? There needs to be something in place for the few reporters or few people who want to report to be plugged into. And that's just another sad piece of the whole thing, is it costs money.
One of the things that comes out in your story is that for Pollockville, Hurricane Florence illustrates what people really need from a newspaper at a time of crisis. And I think the coronavirus is revealing the importance. It's one of the reasons we're doing this program, the importance of local news, because it's on the ground kind of news. And there's this thing that Alice Strayhorn tells you that I think illustrated it perfectly. You say she watches CNN, but as she told you, it isn't much help. Mm-hmm. That's what a local newspaper is supposed to be. And it gets at the thing that you mentioned from Penny Abernathy, that a newspaper is more than just news. It's something she told us as well. It binds a community together in an important way.
Yeah, Yeah, absolutely. And I think at the same time, cable news often divides us, right? So we have our CNN camp, and we have our, maybe they're allied with the MSNBC camp, but then there's the Fox News camp across the dividing line. And, you know, all the, I think a lot of the partisan issues are inflamed by that kind of a news source, which still, of course, does useful things. I'm not throwing out cable news entirely, but a newspaper is so important to talk about also the positive stories that bind a town together. I mean, talk about the local sports teams and the church news and, you know, Christmas on Main Street and yeah, the raccoon or the coyote that keeps disturbing people or whatever, you know, the stuff that everybody that allows for those kinds of communal conversations to happen that help, you know, tie people and communities together. A newspaper really helps facilitate that. And in a town like Pollocksville, that wasn't happening. And so there was a lot of division, some of it along racial lines, some of it along political lines. But it was a small town that didn't feel as cohesive as it might be with a paper.
Yeah. Let me ask you finally, it's this, yeah, this story that you uncover, this kind of the mayor isn't transparent about this $67,000 in public money. That's a story that a national magazine reporter shouldn't have uncovered. Somebody else should have been on that story. Like, that seems to be another one of the messages that came from all of this. Somebody else should have been paying attention to that.
Yeah. Yeah. And after my story came out, there were a few reporters, in more populated parts of North Carolina, at papers that are larger but were still stretched thin, who said, you know, thanks for this piece, good piece. You know, I'm going to see if I can look into that a little bit more. And yeah, I haven't checked back in. I'm dubious as to, frankly, how much time those folks would have to dive into something like that. But at least they're aware of it now.
Charles Bethay, thank you very much for taking the time.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
That's Charles Bethay. He's a staff writer with The New Yorker. You can find a link to his story. It's called What Happens When the News Is Gone on our website, radiowest.org.